All right, welcome back to Card Knock Life, episode 66, I think. This is Corey. I know this is Corey. I think this is episode 66. And yes, this is Daryl.
Dude, doesn't matter what episode it is. We just show up. Sometimes we drink, sometimes we don't.
Sometimes we talk. Sometimes we mumble.
sometimes we eat food really loud in the microphone.
Yeah, I'm going to try to refrain from doing that this time. Okay. But, but it's, you know, sometimes it happens, right? So we got a lot to talk about this week because we took the last 2 weeks off, and that was partially my fault. I was away with the band. We went on a trip to Greece, actually. We were away for a week, so it just returned last night.
So I know you do – I know you have your own band, and then you also are a band teacher.
Yeah.
So for the folks at home, that was the school band, I assume.
Yeah, it was a school band. School band went to Greece, marching band. So we traveled for a week and played some marching band performances in Greece.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it was a blast. I'm glad to be home though. Sleeping in my own bed is something I was really looking forward to.
I think the word you're thinking is vastly superior to any hotel room or hostel.
Yeah. We were staying in hotels, but the showers in the hotels like didn't have curtains and like didn't. Like the last hotel we stayed in didn't have a shower head that was like mounted to the wall anywhere near like where the shower is supposed to be. Like it was down like by where the handles are, like on the ground. So you have to like hold the thing up over your head. And the shower tub was like about 3 feet long. It's very, very
narrow. That seems pretty horrible.
Yeah, so it was really it's really kind of uncomfortable.
Enough shitty hotel rooms, let's talk about Magic.
Yeah, all right. So aside from that, the trip was fine. But anyways, Magic the Gathering, that's what we came here to hear about, not the shower in Greece. Armacat spoilers. We got to talk about all of them. We haven't talked about any of them because they all came out since our last cast.
We got almonds, we got cats, we got almond cats.
Almond let's cats. Do this. I think that it's worth talking about these the mechanics kind of individually real quick because the mechanics are kind of interesting on this set. And
okay.
It's sort of like unlike anything we've ever had before. They've done a really good job of making mechanics that seem kind of like...
That's not entirely true because there are some mechanics that we've seen before.
Like cycling, is that what you're talking about?
And gods.
Yeah, sure, gods. But gods are done in a different way.
Yes, they are.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is that Exert is new, Aftermath is new, and Embalm is new. Yet they seem like things that are kind of like, how am I trying to say this here? They're kind of things that seem very like vanilla. They seem very like.
It like, seems like they're things we've seen before.
They seem like things that we should have had before. a lot of the mechanics seem very derived. You know, a lot of the things like the Megamorph seems very derived and contrived, and these things seem very very kind of natural for them to create. And it's they're cool. I'm excited about them.
Yeah.
Let's start with Embalm. Embalm is basically flashback for a creature, and what it does is an Embalm cost on a creature is typically more mana than the creature costs originally. But you can play the cost for the creature from the graveyard. And then when you do, you make a copy of the creature as a token. And it's a zombie plus whatever the creature's types are as a creature token on the battlefield then. And then you exile the creature. And you do that as a sorcery.
Okay. So there's one really big and important thing to kind of point out that makes this better than flashback.
What's that?
Which is the fact that it doesn't get stopped by Grafdigger's Cage or Containment Priest for those of you who play Legacy. So the way it works is it's an activated ability in the graveyard, but the creature never enters the battlefield. The creature is exiled and it makes a token. So since it makes a token, Containment Priest can't stop it. And since it doesn't actually put the creature into play from the graveyard, Grafdigger's Cage can't stop them.
Hmm, okay.
So if you get something like a creature with a disenchant on it, you're going to see a lot of really awkward situations from people who are playing Dredge because they're going to play this creature, kill your cage or kill your rest in peace. It's going to die, and then they can bring it back and kill your cage, but you can't stop them from killing your cage like you would an Ancient Grudge.
Sure, sure.
You know, so it's... There is some minor upside there.
Yeah, that's interesting to note. There's not a whole lot of like really splashy embalm creatures at this point. There are really only two that I've seen spoiled so far. One of them happens to be, in fact, they're both commons and uncommons. One of them happens to be the uncommon that is probably like the game day promo that they're going to give out, and that's True Heart Duelist, which is one and a white for a 2/2. It can block an additional creature each combat, and then it's got an embalm cost of 2 and a white. So basically, it's just a like a kind of a removal spell in disguise. Kind of a utility defense creature. So it's interesting, and maybe there's something that has some play in like some kind of modern formats that makes it relevant for you to get around like Gravedigger's Cage and Containment Priest. But to this point, there's really nothing that you would really be concerned about that interaction. All right, so this seems to me like something that we should have had before. I guess that's the point I was trying to make with this being a very like kind of vanilla type ability. It seems like something that is really basic. It's really bare bones. It's really straightforward. And I'm surprised that it's taken Magic like, what, 23 years to come up with something that is just as simple as return this creature from your graveyard to play for a cost. You know, doesn't it surprise you that now we finally have an ability, a keyword mechanic that does such a thing?
I mean, I think it's like 10 years really, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, Flashback was in like 99 or something like that, you know. But the real question is, like, you know, when it comes to an ability like that, what is the best way to inject it into the standard environment and also not feel like you just rehash an ability? Because, yeah, you know, coming off of Flashback, you don't want to be like, oh, here's Flashback for creatures, and we're just going to inject it in this really generic, non-applicable to the storyline or location way.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think that this is one of the best ways that could have done it. You know, here we are in Egypt, where mummification and embalming is very much a part of the culture. And we haven't had Flashback for a while. So, here's Flashback.
Yeah, sure. All right, another keyword mechanic or ability that's included in the set is exert, and exert is really cool.
I'm too stupid to play with this keyword. I'm just gonna make the statement right now. Way too stupid.
It certainly is gonna challenge players. Exert is an ability that when a creature attacks, you can exert a creature, which means that you have an extra option to put. I don't know how you're gonna keep track of this, by the way. I guess you can put a counter on the creature to show that it's exerted, and when it is, it doesn't untap as normal during the next untap step.
So,
and then each creature individually has a different benefit for exert.
Yeah, so theoretically, like there's no indicator from, you know, like a game mechanics piece of point of view, but it is up to the players to sort of maintain that game state.
So I could tap left instead of right?
Sure, I mean,
tap 180 degrees instead of 90? I don't know.
Yeah.
You like Pokemon stunned and poisoned or whatever.
Yeah, so there is something that is interesting, and it's typically when you see something like this, like I'm going to use a pretty recent example, Investigate.
Yeah.
You know, they put Investigate on a bunch of random spells, but they also put it on creatures. You know, there's Tireless Tracker and Three-Man Inspector, but then they printed an enchantment that gave all of your creatures Investigate if you deal combat damage, I think, or something similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if a creature you control deals combat damage, Investigate. So I expect there will also be an enchantment that's like very related to Bolas or one of the gods that, like, if you exert, you can exert each creature for a bonus effect. Like, if it's red, something like a Hellrider effect. If it's white, something like gain a little life. Or blue, draw an extra card. Or black, you know, draining them one. You know, something like that could be a thing that you see happening.
Sure. An example of an exert card is Oncrop Crasher, which is 2 and a red for a 3/2 haste. By the way, this is going to be a limited all-star. You may exert Oncrop Crasher as it attacks. When you do, target creature can't block this turn.
Oh, this card's definitely going to get played in standard, 100%.
You think so?
Yeah. It doesn't beat cards like Ishkana, because Ishkana goes super wide.
Yeah.
But, like, in an aggressive deck, sometimes you just need to, like, tempo your opponent because you want, like, one drop, one drop, one drop. And you just need to get their one blocker out of the way. So, I mean, it gives you a lot of room to work in. Or if you just need a 3-2 haste that attacks for 3 every turn, you can just have a 3-2 haste. And if you need a 3-2 haste that also has a bonus effect, you can kind of skip every other turn to make it happen.
Yeah, so far all the exert spells, or the exert creatures, I should say, appear to be exerting when they attack. And I think that that's probably going to be where you see that ability happening.
Well, that's how the... Oh, okay, yeah. I see you can exert a creature, like tap, exert, do a thing. Okay, that
like
makes sense.
Like as an activated ability. I don't know if that's going to be possible. I don't know if that's going to be an option. I think that's primarily when they attack.
Based on the rules text, which is an exerted creature won't untap during your next untap step,
uh-huh.
You could have like mana cost, exert this creature, tap.
Yeah,
do a thing. So that could be a possibility. But I think the most logical methodology through which you get an exerted creature is by attack.
Flavor-wise, I think this is a total win. I think this is really cool. Like, exert is just like they give this extra effort to do this thing. That's really cool.
Then they need to rest, yeah.
And then the other cool thing about this is it's worth noting that if the creature doesn't tap to attack, it can still exert. And then you can also find ways to untap the creature and then use the exert again on the next turn. So Patrick Chapin and Michael Flores go into the details about how you can take advantage of Glorybringer, which is one of these like premier exert cards in this set. This is one of the rares that we're going to talk about in a moment here. So I'm going to spare that card for our spoiler portion here. But you can talk about cards like Blessed Alliance, for example, has that untap function. That, you know, you could get an extra exert function out of some of these creatures.
Like, there's a combat trick that you can cycle that untaps the creature and lets you incremental damage. Dejiru's Resolve. So it would be an assumption that Dejiru is the name of the white god. Pretty easy to surmise that. But, like, you can cast this and untap your guy for incremental damage and block with it. Or if you don't need it, it's just a cycler.
Oh, that's sweet. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, and then lastly here, or I guess we have like kind of like a couple more here. We have Aftermath as well, and this is like this is kind of weird. I have mixed feelings on this. So, but Aftermath is like a split card.
This is what we thought was fake.
Yeah,
because it was like the very first card spoiled. But then we got an actual Aftermath card in Destined and Lead. So Destined is one in a black instant, target creature gains indestructible until end of turn and +1/+0. And then Lead is 3 in a green, Aftermath. Cast this spell only from your graveyard, then exile it. All creatures able to block target creature this turn do so. So the other Aftermath spell that we all kind of wasn't sure about was Dusk Dawn, which is 2 white, destroy all creatures with power greater than or equal to 3. And then Aftermath, cast this spell and exile it from your graveyard. Return all creatures with power less than 2 from your graveyard to your hand. So.
Yeah, it's weird. It looks stupid, first of all, the whole sideways
thing. I like the visual. I agree with you. The visual is very bad. So let's talk about the concept that this card does 2 things, but you only have access to one of them when it's in the graveyard.
It's like a flashback cost, but the flashback is some other function of the spell, right?
It's a totally different spell.
In fact, some cases it's like an instant becomes a sorcery. Destined is an instant. Lead is a sorcery. So that it gives them freedom to do that, and it's a different color too.
So it's also worth noting, like, if something like Thoughtseize were to come back to this format, it's not going to. Like, I mean, just as an example, you have to take a look at a card like Dusk Dawn, you know, the Wrath that also reanimates all your guys and puts them in your hand, uh-huh. And you have to say, can I play a game where my opponent gets to Wrath me and then reanimate and then, like, pick up all his guys afterwards? And if the answer is no, well, then you have to go, well, can I play a game where my opponent gets to pick up all his guys? Like, so, I mean, you could keep them off of the function that scares you, but then, you know, the other function could also be equally as scary. So it is something to have to kind of play around. It's really weird. I don't like the execution, but I understand, like, trying to bring back the split card style with a different way to enable it, you know? So, I mean, I see what they're doing. I think it's kind of cool. I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, I think that the concept with these seems to be, like, the first half of the card is, like, a little bit overcosted version of the card, whereas, like, with the split cards, you paid a little bit more to have the options. Now, this one is, like, the first half of the card is a little overcosted. The second half of the card is, like, a lot overcosted. Like, to pay 3 mana and a green for all creatures that are able to block target creature, that's a 1 mana spell. That's Lure is 1 mana.
So for that card, or whatever. So for that card, it's overcosted. But if you look at something like Dusk Dawn,
yeah,
that second effect isn't a thing that we've ever seen before.
5 mana to return all creatures with power 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to evaluate that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's something we've never seen before. And so, because we've never seen it, it incentivizes you to play with cards like, I mean, if these were cards that were legal and standard, it incentivizes you to play with Lone Missionary and Wall of Omens and Phantasmal Image. You know, I'm just kind of naming these 2-power creatures. Basically, any creature that Rebel Art can get you back, Mole Drifter. If these were cards that ended up in Standard, these are cards that you're incentivized to play. And, well, it looks like they would fit in a control strategy because you have this Wrath of God for large creatures.
Uh-huh.
Your small creatures can stay and play and block their small creatures. And then when your opponent kills enough of your value creatures, you're like, all right, I want them all back. Draw, like, 6 cards plus whatever effects are stapled to them. So, I mean, there is... This card can be put in a shell that makes it powerful. But it's just very hard to evaluate because, like, both effects are powerful, but we've never seen them put together in such a strange way.
Yeah, I get that. That's true. Whenever you have value, or whenever you have options, I should say, it's always just good. It's always just good to have options. It's always good to have utility. And so it's like, worth playing cards that are just a mediocre when you just have choices, when you have more choices to make, because there are just so many situations that you need to have answers to. And on top of that, having those options leads to having Delirium.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that playing cards like Destined and Lead increases your Delirium count much faster. And this might be a good way to you know, power up a Grimflare, Traverse the Uvenwald deck, and, like, right on color, too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Looks good. Anyways, let's look at just, like, the last, like, 2 or 3 here really quickly, because I'd like to get to, like, the actual individual cards. There are things called cartouches, which is, like, basically a specific type of enchantment, and cartouches are things that basically are just cartouches matter. And those are types of enchantments that say, if you control another cartouche, do something else, or, you know, for each cartouche you control, do something else. Similar to, like, the shrines. And I think it's kind of cool to note that, you know, it's worth noting, or it's worth paying attention to which cards are cartouches, so that you can see those synergies as they
may make something happen. Yeah. Okay.
The gods are a little different in the way that they're handled this time around. We've got our first spoiler for a god this today, and it's a red god, Hazoret the Fervent, and that's 3 and a red for a 5/4 indestructible haste. Legendary creature god. It is a creature all the time. That's the difference. That's the main difference. It can be exiled from the get-go. But the difference is it can't attack or block unless you have 1 or fewer cards in hand. And it's got 2 and a red. Discard a card. It deals 2 damage to each opponent. So I think the weird thing about this is, if we didn't have the Theros gods first, if this appeared as, like, the first time we're seeing gods in Magic, like, the whole, like, fact that it's a god and the thing that makes it a god is this drawback, it would be kind of awkward to say that, like, what makes it a god is the fact that it can't do something, you know? Whereas, like, the Theros ones made it seem like it's a god because it has to be, like, awakened by, like, this devotion count. This one very much just seems like a bit of a drawback that it has. You know what I'm saying?
So, thematically, it makes total sense. Because if you look at, like, culture in Egypt, like, people had, there were different gods. There were many gods. And they reigned over specific things. And oftentimes they stayed out of the business of the normal runnings of things. But once things became in such a way that they had to take action, or that someone invoked their fury or wrath, they took action. So Hazoret is like, you know, okay, I'm gonna whoop some ass, but, like, I don't really have to deal with this right now. But when the things of his people start to get dire, when you're out of resources, you know, he shows up and does work. And then you can offer sacrifices to him by, you know, paying mana and discarding cards, and you'll get the favor of Hazoret. He will shine light on you and give you something. And then if you continue to be devoted to him, eventually he will show up.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of, it makes sense in the concept of how people would think of a godlike figure in these multi-theistic religions.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I still think it's a little awkward the way that it's done. I don't.
I think it makes complete sense, like, thematically. Like, yeah. You don't see Hades, like, running around from the Greek mythology. You don't see Hades just doing everything. Like, he just kind of hangs out in, you know, where in his domain until he sees fit to interfere in the works of man. Or sure. Someone has asked him to do so and offered sacrifice, and so he is bestowing his favor upon them. It's the same thing. It's the same thing here.
Well, other differences include that this is no longer like an enchantment creature. It's literally just a legendary creature god. So yeah. We don't have like the cool like fancy border. So really, this doesn't appear to be much different than any other creature in the set. There's nothing that really stands it out from that. In fact, the only thing is that it's indestructible. So my guess is that our gods are going to be all indestructible creatures, right? They'll probably be somewhere around like 3 to 4 mana, 3, 4, 5 mana, monocolored.
There was an article.
Going to have one or two abilities on them.
There was an article that was written about how they wanted to design how a god functioned based on the way Theros gods function.
Okay.
That's on the mothership. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So what do you think about this guy, by the way? Do you think this guy's playable?
A lot of people are going to die to this guy really hard.
Yeah.
Like, so this is exactly what your aggressive red X aggro deck, whether it's red green, red blue, you know, whatever aggro deck you're playing. It's exactly what you want. Like, oftentimes your aggro deck runs out of steam, so you need something that's like a powerful top deck that can do work. An indestructible 5/4 is really hard to beat in top deck mode. Like, that's gonna take a huge chunk out of your opponent's life points. And it also gives you a mana sink to go into the late game, and it gives you something to do with excess lands. You get to turn your lands into shocks. You get a mana sink for when you're top decking, and this is all you've got, and you draw in lands. And then you have, this guy's just an amazing top deck, because then if you have no cards, he's just a 5/4 haste, indestructible. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
So, like, I think this guy is extremely playable. It's going to be kind of tricky when you play a mono red deck and you just open your hand and have this guy and you have two of it. You're just like, shit. But like, in your mono red deck, that the curve tops out with this guy. Like, this guy is really strong. You can even play it like red green aggro and stuff like that. I think this card is more playable than people will give it credit for.
Okay, fair enough. I certainly see him as a good curve topper, but I don't know. Like, when I see mono red aggro these days, I want to go like just like in this meta, I want to just go balls to walls like Jekyll pups. You know, like I want to just race. And like, if I'm gonna run this guy, I'm gonna run like one or two tops.
Yeah,
and I just don't see that deck going much higher than a 3-drop.
I don't expect that to be, you know, this guy to be a 4-of. But I think it's a very reasonable, like, mid-range. Like, if you want to become big red, I think this is where you want to start.
Yeah.
Worth noting, though, that in the set, -1/-1 counters have kind of made a little bit of a comeback. So it does give us a way to directly interact with those indestructible gods.
Yeah, in fact, there are a lot of ways to deal with indestructible gods in this set, because we have Declaration in Stone, and we've got Stasis Snare. And we've also got Grasp of Darkness, which kills this guy directly. So
yeah.
there's no shortage of removal spells for this guy in particular. I don't know what the stats are going to be on the other gods, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm just commenting on in this specific set itself. Like, okay, there is an internal... Okay. Yeah, like, once all that stuff from Innistrad rotates, there is a thing, like, once we're in Kaladesh plus this, like... They understood that these things will be very powerful if there's not a drawback to them, which is they're always creatures, so they can get -1/-1 counters.
Yeah, I felt like in Theros there were some really problem areas where we got to Thassa and you just like had nothing against that.
Or Keranos.
Yeah.
Karinus was a really egregious one as well.
Or Erebos.
Yeah, Erebos also.
All right, so I think this is a good transition point for the spoilers. I have kind of picked out a couple that I really want to talk about, but feel free to add some to this list as we go through. I know you haven't seen a ton of these spoilers yourself, but the first one, there's a really obvious reprint in here that I think is worth noting. Aven Mind Sensor is being reprinted as a rare in this set.
Sure.
And Aven Mind Sensor is... before we go into the specifics of how it's going to play out in Standard, I just want to mention that it was like a $12 card as an uncommon, as a modern staple before this, this announcement. So,
much needed reprint. But my question is, what the hell is its relevance going to be in Standard? Like, the way they did the art, it thematically fits. Like, other than you say Traverse the Evenwald is a big thing. Like, other than Traverse the Evenwald, which isn't that's going away because Innistrad's going to rotate. So what rotates then?
Nothing. Not until December. We're gonna have no rotation with this set coming in.
I'm so confused. I don't know how Standard works anymore.
I know. It's confusing because they've changed the rotation. So, we're going to keep everything the same when this set comes in until quarter four.
Okay.
Battle for Zendikar, Oath of the Gatewatch until quarter four, 2017. Shadows of Rennistrad, and Eldritch Moon until quarter four, 2017.
Oh my god.
It's running a 2-year rotation, so we're going to have a whole lot of the same.
Okay, so then this will be really good because it beats up on Traverse. Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, Traverse is not a huge factor right now. We can look at Standard meta, and I don't think that there's a lot that's out there that is going to be really affected by this.
So I think that there will be some manipulation of the meta, because, like, certainly I think they're going to realize how egregious the copycat combo is.
Uh-huh.
But this card also turns off Attune with Aether. So, I mean, mine are there. But, like, there's got to be something in Amonkhet block that makes this relevant. Like, they wouldn't just put this very specific hoser here and have it have no relevance.
I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, security against, like, Nahiri. Because Nahiri's still around. And it's just, like, are we concerned about, like, Nahiri plus something that's going to be printed in this set. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, there's got to be a reason why this card is relevant.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think they would just put this card randomly in this set without it being relevant.
Right. Except for it needing a reprint, you know? I mean, it's $12. Like I said, it's called for. So.
Right, but like, conceptually, like, Thoughtseize is always relevant. So when they reprinted Thoughtseize, it was just like, okay, easy every time. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, this is just going to be relevant Standard, period.
Sure.
But like, a card like Aven Mind Sensor doesn't have a ton of relevance unless there's a lot of searching. It doesn't make sense to include a card like Aven Mind Sensor if there's not going to be a very specific reason why.
There's nothing yet. There's nothing yet.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that was the first one. Let's move on. Prowling Serpopard. I don't know how to say that word, but that's a cat. Okay. That's a cat snake. If you've ever seen one of those in your life, it's one green for a 4/3 cat snake.
Okay, so this is pretty good.
It can't be countered, and creature spells you control can't be countered. Now on paper, this card is bonkers.
This card's Vex terrible Shusher.
But yeah, I like any other time of year, like. Okay, ask me about this card like 10 years ago, and I would just be losing my mind over this because it's like undercosted. It's got more power than toughness. It can't be countered, and it prevents all of your other creatures from being countered. So it's just like the like premier like green creature.
Right.
But right now, I am just not excited about it. I don't think it does anything for you.
So there's nothing really that you need to protect. There's no counter spells you need to protect yourself from. Like, that's not a thing, really.
Well, there aren't.
Yeah, there's disallow. That's really it. So the question is, like, a 4/3. Is a 4/3 good? And so the question, the answer is, how good is Rogue Refiner? Is Chandra being played? Does anyone play Harness Lightning? What about Grasp of Darkness?
Well,
this
creature doesn't block Toolcraft Exemplar. This creature doesn't block Scrappy Scrounger.
Also dies to the Good call. But, like, I was just thinking of, like, the four biggest removal spells in Standard are those four.
Sure.
And it loses to all of them. Like, that's pretty horrible. Like, if you're just like, oh, yeah, my turn three before their turn four, slam this guy, got a guy. And your opponent's just like, Chandra, kill it, you have no board. And you're just like, damn. I'm going to lose to that Chandra. Like, so, not great.
How about this? How about this? Consider it a sideboard piece only. What do you want it? You want it against the blue base deck, obviously, right? I want it
playing Disallow. That is it.
Okay, so the deck's playing Disallow. They're primarily playing Void Shatter, actually. They play more of those than Disallow because they want to get rid of Scrap Heap's Grounder. So that's like a Teemer Tower deck. That is the most commonly played like counterspell deck.
Guess what cards that deck has in it? Chandra, Harness Lightning.
Yeah, it's got, well, not so much Chandra, but it definitely has Harness Lightning. It's got Incendiary Flows. It's got...
Does it have Rogue Miner? Are they playing that just for the energy? Like,
No, Bristling Hydra, Torrential Gearhulk.
Oh, I wasn't sure if they were playing Rogue Refiner because of the energy equals cantrip, but...
No.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Mostly just Torrential Gearhulk. There's some, like, some Bristling Hydra in this one deck I pulled up, but that's pretty uncommon.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, it takes a little pressure off of the Harness Lightnings for you, but it still dies to Harness Lightning.
Not excited by it, yeah.
Radiant Flames will kill it, too. I don't know. I don't think this is a real big factor unless we see a bunch of, like, really major counterspells printed in this set. And at most, I could see, a piece or one or two of these guys in the sideboard. But there's no time for it right now. Anyways, I thought I'd bring that up because on paper, this guy's insane. But when you look in a vacuum in a standard meta right now, he's just not good. He's not
pretty bad. Pretty bad.
How about Modern, though?
Pretty bad.
He's Collected Company-able.
Bolt
is a thing, and we talked about this extensively on the last cast.
Yeah.
Is it still a thing? I don't know.
I mean, it's still pretty a thing. Like, people are still playing Bolt.
Yeah. So,
Bolt Path, Condemn, Fetch Land plus Fatal Push is all kind of rough for that guy. Doesn't die to Collective Brutality, but that's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, well, this next one I'm really excited about, and I spent some time before the cast looking up the possibilities for this guy. This is Flameblade Adept, and one red for a 1/2 uncommon. It's a Jackal Warrior. So
he's
going to get some kind of Jackal nicknames based on, like, Jackal Pup. He's a 1/2 menace, and whenever you cycle or discard a card, he gets +1/+0 until end of turn. There are a lot of comparisons of this guy to, like, Monastery Swift Spear. Or Goblin Guide.
No.
I think he's totally different than that.
I think he's way worse than both of those cards.
And certainly not as good as Monastery Swift Spear or Goblin Guide. But he's definitely more abusable in some situations. Because whenever you discard a card, cards say, like, discard your hand, give him +7/+0. So think about this. Let me just throw out some options here. Collective Brutality is a spell that is, like, pretty well on curve with this guy. Turn 2, Collective Brutality. You can pump him up with that. Bomat Courier is like this guy's best friend in a deck that just wants to go aggressive, like one drops, right? Bomat Courier has the function where you can pay one red to discard your hand. So you can get in there for 7 damage that way, and then you can draw cards off of it as well.
Right. I think you're just missing the big picture here, but go ahead.
How about this one? Olivia Mobilized Reward. Do you know what that card does?
No. Not a clue.
All right, so check this out. Olivia Mobilized for War is 1 red black. All right, I gotta pull this up because I don't want to get it wrong. She's a legendary creature, and she is a 3/3 flying. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may discard a card. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on that creature. It gains haste until end of turn, and it becomes a vampire in addition to its other types. So these guys are coming into play as 3/4 haste menace.
You mean 2/3? Or 3/4?
No, because they get +1/+1 until end of turn.
No, they meant 3/3s. They only get +1/+0.
Oh, 3/3s. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad, right?
So I think you're missing the big piece of this.
And then wait, there's more. Just wait before you
burst your bubble.
Cathartic Reunion is on curve with this guy. Turn two, discard two cards, give him +2/+0.
Yup.
And then I also found this guy, Pale Rider of Trostad, which is a black creature that you probably never heard of before. And this is a 1 and a black for a 3/3. It's like dog or something.
We're reaching. We're reaching here.
We are reaching. He is a 3/3 skulk. And when he comes into play, you have to discard a card or you sacrifice him, I believe.
Okay.
So, all right, burst my bubble. What do you got?
Okay, so here's the thing. This guy is fine with cycling.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I think 100% great with cycling. Because of the same reason that Monastery Swiftspear is fine in Modern, is that you're doing what you were going to do anyways and getting additional value out of it.
Uh-huh.
You are going to cast Lightning Bolt. Don't kid yourself. You're going to cast Lava Spike. I know you were going to Boros Charm me. You might as well get an extra point of damage out of it. You know? You were going to cast that Seer Visions. Might as well get a point of damage out of it. Whereas, for this guy, at what point is +1/+0 ever worth more than a card? Like, the answer's never. Unless you're discarding a land. This never worth more than a card.
Yeah, right. I mean, you certainly don't want to be like, you don't want your game plan to be like, all right, I'm going to pitch as many cards as I can right now to like pump right. this guy up.
Right. But here's the thing, though, is that so you need to be like Monster Swiftspear, where there are static ways to discard cards and pump this guy. But the problem with that is, A, it doesn't get a bigger toughness, so it dies to shock still, no matter how much effort you put into it. And B, like, you have to have cards to discard.
Sure.
So, like, you have to have a bunch of cards that you're willing to discard a Cathartic Reunion. You have to have a bunch of, like, you have to have cards in your hand to discard the Bowman Courier. Like, the condition is they have to be there. Which decks that you're playing this guy in are going to be aggressive decks. So you're not often going to have cards to discard.
Yeah, and I think the whole idea of, like, turn two cycling a card to give him +1/+0, that's, like, pretty poor tempo. Going turn one, play a 1/2, turn two cycling a Sheltered Thicket or a Canyon Slough, which is, like, the red-based dual cycling land. Yeah. That's pretty damn slow for an aggressive deck. You don't want to be doing that. Any kind of cycling on turn two with this guy on the table is just bad. You don't want to be passing your turn to get one more point of damage in there.
Street Wraith.
But then we're talking Modern. This is a different conversation. So hang on. Before we get there, I want to get this the time of day in Standard.
But what if they reprint Street Wraith in Standard?
Oh my god. Alright, stop. Stop.
But what if they reprint Street Wraith?
Alright, so the thing in this list of cards that I threw out there that got me most excited about this is the possibility to go turn one, Flameblade Adept, turn two, Cathartic Reunion, discard two, draw three. That's not a tempo or not a card advantage loss, and it pumps him up +2/+0. I think attacking for three on turn two is perfectly reasonable. Filling up your graveyard is perfectly reasonable, and in filtering some cards is perfectly reasonable. And just having the mere upside of being able to have that option of giving that pumping that creature up. Now, it's not the worst case scenario if you don't have a way of discarding a spell, because if this guy's got Menace, he's going to get in unblocked on turn two.
Sure, I'm not sold.
You're not sold. All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see what else shows up in this set. I don't think that cycling is the answer. I think the more important aspect of this guy is whenever you discard a card, it gets +1/+0. It excites me that you can, like, when your opponent is at 7 life, you can find a way to discard your hand. Say you have 6 cards in hand at that point in the game when you're playing a red deck. I don't know how you've managed to do that, but say you do. you're able to kill them.
I'm interested if you have Street Wraith or one mana cyclers.
Sure. So that's the thing that I put down here in Modern.
Two mana cyclers, not so interested.
Street Wraith is great. So Street Wraith in Modern, another thing that was brought up in Modern, Faithless Looting is pretty good with this guy in Modern.
Yeah, completely reasonable.
Okay, but then that brings us to the point, like, do you really want to be playing this guy plus Street Wraith when you can just be playing, like, Death Shadow? Or do you play both?
No.
No, probably not.
Not all even right. close.
So, there you go. Make your own decision. I don't know. Maybe he's just garbage, but...
Garbage.
It's worth thinking about.
Garbage.
It might be enough to make, like, a vampire deck possible.
It might be garbage.
Anyways, we've also got Glorybringer, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because there's a whole top level podcast where they talk about this guy for like 40 minutes, but this is the dragon that I mentioned before, with Exert. It's 3 red for a 4/4 flying haste, and it is a dragon, like I said. You can exert it when it attacks, and if you do, it deals 4 damage to target non-dragon creature and opponent controls. So the big point that Patrick and Michael made was that this thing can kill Gideon pretty effectively, which it does. It pairs up pretty well with Gideon, but what it doesn't do very well is it doesn't beat Archangel Avacyn very well. And I think most importantly to me is if this guy really becomes a big answer to Gideon, Ishkanah Graph Widow is a really great answer to this guy.
Hell of a magic card Ishkanah Graph Widow is.
Yeah. So I don't know. If this is what it comes down to, if this is really the best answer for Gideon, I could see like some kind of green and white Ishkanah like Gideon strategy coming to fruition, because a 3/5 is going to block this guy all day.
Abzan Gideon?
Abzan Gideon, yeah. Well, some kind of like token, green-white tokens or something coming back, you know. There are people talking about ways to cheat this exert over and over, things like... Always Watching gives him vigilance so that you can exert turn and turn again.
Sure.
That would also make him a 5/5. He'd pair better with the 3/5 Ishkanah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you just have to do a lot of work for not a lot of payoff.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's a great card. We'll have to see how much of a drawback this exert really is.
I think it will be standard playable.
Yeah. I don't doubt that.
I'm going to go out on a limb. Standard playable.
Yeah. It certainly will. We've seen this this formula for quite a while. Just about every red 5-mana dragon has been playable. We've seen Stormbreath, we've seen Sarakhan, we've seen Thundermaw Hellkite all get played in standard, and all of them are just basically that 5-mana haste dragon with their different kinds of upsides.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so Dusk and Dawn is the next one. We talked about this one a little bit. This is Aftermath card.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do with this? Well,
let's read it first. Two white for a sorcery. Destroy all creatures with power greater or equal to 3 is Dusk. And then the Aftermath, you can cast Dawn from your graveyard, which is also a sorcery. And it's return all creature cards with power... power less than or equal to 2 from your graveyard to your hand, and that costs 3 white. It's garbage. This is garbage, right?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, probably? Possibly? Could be?
It just seems so bad. The Aftermath just seems so useless to me, and it's like 5 so mana that, takes so an entire aftermath, turn, and you get no impact.
So the Aftermath is like drawing a bunch of like Wall of Omens and like those types of cards. So if there are cards like that that are playable, like if like Glintnest Crane is not an unplayable magic card, or Wall of Omens, or Lone Missionary, or, you know, whatever two snap, like, for God forbid they give a Snapcaster Mage, you know, like something like that. If, you know, there are a bunch of 2 power Revel Arc targets that are playable, then this Aftermath is great. Because you're just like, I'm going to play this control deck where, you know, these white, blue, or white, black X creatures, or white, green X creatures supplement my control plan of, like, slowing the game down and making your stuff suck. Uh-huh. And then I'm going to kill all your big guys. And then the turn after that, I'm going to get back all my
supplement creatures and put them into play and try and beat you down with them or, you know, whatever. But it's dependent on what two power or less creatures there are. And if they don't suck. Like, the best one so far for, like, controlling strategy or mid-range strategy for this is the most obvious one, which is Thraven Inspector. Just because it draws you a card.
Yeah, that just seems really lackluster. Like, I have a really hard time figuring out what kind of deck you want to put this in. You know, like, the deck that I can envision plays, like, Thraven Inspector and then a bunch of, like, control spells. And for me to pay 5 mana to get, like, 2 Thraven Inspectors in my hand, like, I feel like I just wasted a turn.
I mean, you pay 5 mana to do it on a turn where you're ahead already, like, where your opponent doesn't have anything on board. And, like, doing it doesn't take you off of a counterspell or something like that. Like,
I guess.
You don't just, like, tap out for this after you kill their guys.
Now, it would be significantly better if that was an instant, obviously.
That would be busted.
But I know we can't have that.
Have you ever played with Revelark? Like,
yeah. Maybe I'm mis-evaluating this card, Daryl. Maybe this is not a control spell, because I think it kind of lends itself to, like, this is for, like, a tiny creature deck, you know?
Yeah, it's a mid-range spell.
Because it kills big, like, creatures, and it returns your small creatures to your hand.
Yeah, like, this is a deck that Rally the Ancestors would play. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's how this card fits. It fits in small value creatures, the deck. And so, like, it takes the pressure off of you from their big creatures, lets you nickel and dime them with your small ones, and then when they kill your small ones, you're like, alright, I can get them all back and play them again. So, like, it fits into a deck that looks like Rally Ancestors without Rally the Ancestors. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
It's just so slow. It's just so slow. And the Wrath is just so conditional. Consider this Wrath, like, equal to or greater than 3. Like, right now, if this card was the only card in Amonkhet and we, like, played a tournament this weekend and we're like, okay, what are we going to do with Dusk Till Dawn in this new meta? This new meta, quote-unquote, because all it is this card, right?
I mean, you're killing, like, Ishkana. You're not killing Hardik,
right? Played. It's awful.
You're not killing Abyssin. You're killing Rogue Refiner. You're killing...
Oh, it does nothing.
Ireless Tracker. You're killing Torrential Gearhulk. Maybe. Maybe if it resolves.
No, you just leave this card at home. You don't do anything with it. It's good against the Jund deck. It deals with a lot of the cards in the Jund deck, and that's about it. Saheeli decks, it's like, it doesn't deal with Felidar Guardian.
Nope,
it doesn't deal with Whirler Virtual, so it doesn't deal with any of its babies. It doesn't deal with Servant of the Conduit, and it probably doesn't deal with Walking Ballista most of the time. So it's like, there's really nothing in that deck that it actually kills.
It actually never deals with Walking Ballista.
Because they can just shrink it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
So this card could be horrible. I don't know. It's like all dependent on how things start to shake out. Like, if there's a ton of, like, sick 2-power value creatures in this set, like, rip it. But if not, then this card's pretty bad. Like, it's fine.
So,
All right,
we can move on. The last one that I've got before is there anything else that you want to talk about before we go on to these lands? Because I feel like that's a long conversation.
I want to talk about the invocations.
Oh, well, hang on. Before we get to those, even, I think we better talk about the spoilers here.
Oh, okay. Other stuff on the spoilers. Oracle's Vault is a very weird card. I don't really know what to think of it.
Yeah, it is weird. I think it's EDH.
Yeah, I think it's really good. Renewed Faith is a freaking great magic card.
That's a reprint, right?
Yeah, it is. It's from Onslaught.
Okay, Renewed Faith is going to be played in control decks.
100%.
This is a sweet card. 2 and a white for an instant spell. You gain 6 life. Already fine, right? It's got cycling. 1 and a white for the cycling cost, and when you cycle it, you gain 2 life.
Okay.
Card's
great. Card is insane. Like, I'm so hopeful, and we're going to talk about cycling lands. It makes my heart go pitter-patter when I hear it, and I think about it even. I really just wanted to reprint Astral Slide, man. I really... Like, this is... If there was ever a time that you could reprint Astral Slide, like, you've teed it up. You've given us Cycling Land. You've given us Renewed Faith. Like, just print the goddamn Astral Slide, please. Like,
yes,
seriously.
That would be so awesome. I've got promo ones, too.
Just give it to me one time.
There are, like, I'm excited about the new Cycling Matters cards in this set because I do have an Astral Slide EDH deck.
Nice.
But there's, like, this Archfiend of Ifnir that is kind of cool. Yeah. It's 3BB for a 5/4 flying demon.
Yeah.
When you cycle or discard another card, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponents control. It makes me hopeful that we're going to see more, like, Cycling Matters stuff in this set. And so, like, cards like Renewed Faith are going to pair well with, like, just one good, like, beater or one good bomb that we can play in a control deck.
Give me the Astral Slide, man. I just want to Astral Slide my Ishkanah. That's all I want. I just want to cycle my crappy green-white Scattered Groves and draw a card and blink my Ishkanah and get some spiders and just...
You know, maybe this Archfiend of Ifnir is like the card that we need to make like some kind of reanimator strategy work, because this is like a pretty sizable creature with cycling, so it's really super easy to put in your graveyard, and
sure,
it also helps you dig for whatever like reanimator piece you need to like put into play.
But maybe they can just give us Astral Slide. All right, I'm gonna stop with Astral Slide.
All right, yeah,
but really, I just want Astral Slide so I can have it in Modern.
Yeah.
Because I just want to Astral Slide people out of the game with Eternal Witness and Life of the Loam and just be like, we're doing it. I miss those days. I miss cycling my land.
Oh, God, that would be fun in Modern. Yeah,
dude. Eternal Witness plus Astral Slide plus Life in the Loam. Woo!
All right, buddy. So let's talk about these lands. I think you're getting onto something here. These lands make... Immediately, I thought of Life in the Loam with these guys. Cycling lands.
These lands here are actually exactly why I wanted them to reprint Astral Slide. Because in my brain, I'm like, Life in the Loam plus these plus Astral Slide plus Eternal Witness and Modern.
Yeah.
I just have to figure out how to kill my opponent because I have Renewed Faith too to keep me alive. Like, oh my god, this is great.
Yeah, that's like some major card advantage with Life in the Loam.
Oh yes. Oh yes it is. A lot slower than the Onslaught Cycling Lands because the Onslaught Cycling Lands cycled for just one of their respective colors. So Tranquil Thicket just cost a green, etc.
Mm.
So I mean, you know, there's a little bit of a downside. These do cost 2 mana to cycle. A little rough. But, you know, picking up 3 of these with a Life in the Loam gives you, you know, it's basically like drawing, it's just like having 3 clues in your hand.
Right. Right.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
So, also worth noting, they can be fetched. That's peculiar to me. Why can they be fetched? Are they printing something like Farseek? Or Ranger's Path, why? Why can these be fetched?
Well, let's see. Let's look back into the set here. What's the green card that gives you energy when you search for land?
Attune with Aether? Only basic.
Is it only basic? Okay. Yeah, it is only basic. Huh. I wonder about that.
Yeah. Like, why? Why can these be fetched? That's completely unnecessary.
Oh my god, if they reprint... They're not going to reprint fetches. There's no way. What would they put in here? You think it's gonna be like Farseek?
It has to be something like Farseek.
Yeah, there's gotta be more than just one card. Like, there's gotta be more than one card to incentivize that, unless it's just purely like for a Modern purpose.
Yeah, if they just stapled basic land types to these for no reason, I would be really upset. But like, why? Why do these have basic land types?
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know. That's really weird.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It bothers me. I'm not mad. I'm just bothered.
I'm happy about that. You know what this is going to be good for is this Sheltered Thicket is going to be great for the Valakut decks.
Oh my, yeah, that's going to be absurd.
And I think Irrigated Farmland is going to be really great for like the blue-white control decks. I'm thinking Modern, by the way.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Oh man, you know what? I just thought of how good these are going to be with Knight of the Reliquary. Like, you can fetch them, take no pain. They come into play tapped anyways. Like, these are cantrips
forest
that you can use. Yeah, the cantrips you can use. You can also like sack to Knight of the Reliquary.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if you run out of forests for some ungodly reason, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a thought.
All right. Well, I honestly do not expect Astral Slide to be reprinted in this set. I'm sorry to say it, but maybe we'll get something else.
Like, give me the Astral Slide one time.
How nice would it be to just have some kind of enchantment that says whenever you cycle, you know,
like
something.
Like Lightning Rift?
Like Lightning Rift, you know, yeah, it's just something along those lines.
Just give me Astral Slide, man. You don't have to be greedy.
You're not going to get an Astral Slide.
God damn it.
But,
don't ruin
the fun. I mean, could you imagine, like, with the Gearhulks around, like, torrential Gearhulk and Astral Slide just seems so degenerate. It's not going to happen, Daryl. All
right. Nah, dude. Green Gearhulk plus Astral Slide plus Snake.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going there. All right.
I
so
love
let's
it.
Talk
I
about
love
these,
it.
Let's talk about these invocations. Let's hit this last bit here
these
and move on.
These are gorgeous. I want them. I hate foils, and I want these. Yeah. Like, I saw like, the inventions and all that stuff, and I'm like, eh, whatevs. These are freaking gorgeous.
They're cool. They're really hard to read.
They are impossible to read. But, like, they're freaking gorgeous, man. Like,
they remind me a little bit of Ancient Mew from
the
Pokemon movie.
Yeah, they definitely copied off of Ancient Mew, I think. But, like, I want some Spell Pierces and some Force of Wills and some Containment Priests. I want an Aggravated Assault and an Austere Command for my EDHs.
Yeah.
Like, I want a Vindicate for my EDH. And
So now we're getting to the point where I think they, like, kind of blew their load a little too fast here on these things. Cause
They're not that exciting.
They're not that exciting. They really aren't. And we had so many, like, really, really splashy and really flashy, like, lands reprinted. Like, we got Wastelands and stuff. There's really nothing in here that makes me think, like, holy shit, I need that. Like, Force of Will. Okay, Force of Will is cool. But there are cards like Dark Ritual in here. Like, yeah, whatever, Dark Ritual. Like, Royal Assassin.
Counterbalance.
Royal Assassin? No, Loyal Retainers. What is Loyal Retainers?
You serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Oh, so it's a 2 and a white for a 1/1.
Looking at it.
1/1 Human Advisor.
Yeah.
Sacrifice it. Return target creature, legendary creature from your graveyard to play. You have to do that before your combat step, I think. That's the only restriction.
Yeah.
But no, like, it was like a P3K card that got reprinted. It was like a P3K card. It was like $80. Yeah, it was a P3K card. It was like $80. It was a huge deal when Survival of the Fittest was in Legacy because you could survival away Iona or Elish War or something like that and then play a Loyal Retainer, stack it, and put your Iona into play, and then your opponent just couldn't do anything. And then it got reprinted in the Commander Arsenal, and Survival of the Fittest got banned, so now it's just like a commander card, but it's still pretty bonkers. So, yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
But these are I love the art style of these. I think they just need to stop doing this for a while.
They're not going to. They've made the claim that this is going to be in every set.
Why? I don't know.
It's going to kind of make the thing not special anymore, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like they're trying to do too much special stuff. They've got these full art lands. They've got dual lands in this set. They've got these invocations.
Yeah, like, they just need to stop doing these for a while. Or if they're going to do them, print cards that are expensive. Like well, Force of Will. And a bunch of them.
There is Force of Will.
But, like, a bunch of them. So that if, you know, Bob opens an Imperial Recruiter invocation, he can sell it for $500 and draft a bunch or build a standard.
Yeah.
You know, don't print Chain Lightning.
Well, I'm sure the Force of Wills are going to be worth a pretty penny just because they're so unique.
Pact Negation will be, Like, don't print Mind Twist. Get that Dark Ritual. I don't give a damn. Like, don't print a card like Entomb. Like, Diabolic Intent is like $30. Print that card. That's fine. Like,
Like, the cards that get played, Daryl, are going to be worth money. Because, like, particularly legacy cards. Like, I could see Entomb being worth, like, probably, like, 60 to 70 bucks.
Yeah. But don't print a card like Divert. Get that shit out of here.
But Entomb, like, they're thematic. Attrition. They're thematic, you know? Like, Entomb works because it's, like, Egyptian, you know? And the art is sweet. All of the art, like, fits with the set.
Oh, no,
really
the art is great. The art is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, like, Don't print Daze.
Daze is cool too. The cards that piss me off are like attrition. Like, what is attrition doing in there? Or aggravated assault?
Yeah, Worship. Very thematically awesome. Get that out of here. You know, Chain Lightning, please. I don't need that.
All right.
Counterspell. All right. Enough railing on the fact to stop doing this for a while so that it becomes special again.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about this. I think it's cool. I think it's awesome. It exists. I've never pulled one of these in a pack. I mean, I don't really open many packs anymore.
Neither do I.
So it's not a factor. But I would like to see one of these like in real life. I think they're going to look even more impressive. So I look forward to that.
Absolutely.
The last round of the what did we call the artifact ones? I don't remember.
Inventions? But
the inventions, yeah. The inventions it had like just a ton of cards that were played in like the mono blue Tron deck. So for a while, I was telling myself that I was just gonna like invention out my mono blue Tron deck on Modo.
Yeah.
And I haven't even started doing that yet, but I can't wait too much longer because they're not too expensive. Like some of them on the card hoarder. Like let me see if I pull up card hoarder here. Like you can get like the angel,
yeah, platinum angel.
Platinum angel. Let's see how much platinum angel is. I think it's like probably like four or five tickets. But it looks really sweet. No, it's a ticket 47. Not even. It's like less than two, and so some of them are like super cheap on Modo. I don't know how much in paper, but it wouldn't be very hard to do that.
Hold up, I'm jumping in here real quick. With something that was just printed on posted on Reddit from a Wizards account. Starting with Amonkhet, we're streamlining split cards a bit. This applies to all split cards, not just the Aftermath cards. Previously, we played a delicate dance when asking about converted mana cost. Sometimes Destined and Lead, so we're talking about the one from Amonkhet, is most likely two. Goblin Dark Dwellers can target it. Sometimes it's more like four. Transgress the Mind can take it. Sometimes it's more like six. Dark Confidant hits you for six when you reveal it. This rewards players who dig into the rules and figure that out, but baffles a lot of people too. So now, it's simple. If Destined and Lead isn't on the stack, it has a converted mana cost of six. Destined on the stack has a CMC of two. Lead on the stack is CMC four. But Destined Lead, anytime it's not one or the other, has a CMC of six.
So, like, I just help me out now. So, how does that apply with Goblin Dark Dwellers?
Boom Bust can no longer be cast as Bust off of Dark Dwellers.
Ah.
Brain in the Jar no longer can Beck Call or Breaking the Nethery.
Good. I was just thinking about that today. As these cards were coming up, I was thinking, you know, it's about time we fix that rule. It's counterintuitive. It causes problems. New players hate that. The first time you get that explained to you, you want to revolt. That's going to cause problems with all the people that are brewing these like expertise decks with the Eldrazi.
Yes.
But deal with it. You shouldn't be playing stupid decks anyway.
I mean, that's fair, but that is a very worthwhile, notable thing is that, you know, now the Beck Call Brain in the Jar deck is only like a thing for another, you know, month or so.
Uh-huh.
So you might see a spike of that until it goes away on Modo or something like that.
Wow. All right. Well, thanks for sharing.
No problem. San Antonio?
Shall we cover the last topic? Yeah, San Antonio. So there's a GP in San Antonio. Like I said, I was out of town, so I did not see any of this.
Neither did I.
But the results are, like, pretty fantastic. This is a modern GP, and I think modern's in a really good place right now. This is not in the proper order.
Well, this is a no. It is in the proper order because this was Team Unified Modern.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So first place.
So go ahead. Before you continue, let's talk about what that means.
Okay.
So Team Unified Modern means that three players play on a team, an A, a B, and a CC. If any one team wins two out of the three matches, the match is over, and that team wins the match. They play three best two out of three matches, you know, A against A, B against B, C against C. The important part about this is it's unified modern. So if I play Thoughtseize in my deck, Corey can't play Thoughtseize in his deck. Even if I only play one Thoughtseize, Corey can't play any. And then if Corey played Serum Visions, I couldn't play Serum Visions, and then our teammate couldn't play Serum Visions or Thoughtseize. So it makes you kind of open your range up a lot and play these decks that won't have a lot of overlap. That's why you see a ton of Tron decks, Affinity decks, Madcap Moon, stuff like that, mm-hmm. where like the important cards that you're on, or the cards that you're losing are only cards like Blood Moon or Fetch Land or Steam Vents, where the other decks can get away without having those decks, without having those cards. That's why, like, as you'll see a lot of Affinities in Moxiple decks, because there are very few Moxiple decks, and there are very few Moxiple decks that take cards out of other decks.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it does make it really tricky. So the problem is like, if you wanted to play a deck like Jund, and Death Shadow both share the same cards, but those cards also go into Grixis. So like, when you put all the Thoughtseizes in your Jund deck, you take them away from Death Shadow. So it's like, you have to, if you play Death Shadow, you take away a ton of the fetch lands and fetchable lands, depending on what version of Death Shadow you play. So there is something to be noted about that, that you do kind of have to be careful of the decks you do play.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I did not realize this was
Unified
Modern. But knowing that, that makes the results a little
more logical,
less informative.
Yeah.
But
also makes them make more sense.
Yeah, it does make them make more sense. But we have had a pretty wide open Modern meta lately. And even with all of this Death Shadow going on, we really haven't had nearly as much ubiquity with Death Shadow as we have with like other oppressive decks that, you know, like Eldrazi Winter and things like that. So
sure.
It certainly hasn't been like plaguing Modern. Now, in the first place team, we don't even have any Death Shadow. So the first place team is playing Affinity, Jund, and this is like classic Jund, and White-Blue Control, which the White-Blue Control deck is, we better just kind of talk about that a little bit. It's playing just
a very small
Planeswalker suite.
It does so much nothing. Like,
yeah,
this Blue-White Control deck does the literal most nothing I have ever seen.
It's like a beat you down with Snapcaster deck.
Like barely even that, dude. Like, you have three Snapcasters, they're probably going to get killed. Like, this deck does the most nothing. It has seven counter spells, and two of them are Mana Leak, and you're going to play a 50-turn game. Like, this deck does so little.
You know, it probably wins with Elspeth Ultimate more often than not.
No, I bet you that's not even the card that the deck wins with. I bet you that this deck strip mines its opponent out of the game more often. With Crucible Worlds and, like, Spreading Seas. I bet it's my opponent can't cast any spells, and I beat them up with Colonnade and Snapcaster. Like, literally, that's probably what happens. Like, I don't understand why the hell this deck is a control deck playing 4 Seacrum Coast. Don't. I couldn't even answer that question. I couldn't even come up with a reasonable answer.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I do not know.
Like, this deck is ridiculous.
Like, yeah, so
like four path plus three condemn plus two porphyry nodes. Jesus. Like, somebody didn't want to lose to creatures.
Yes, the nodes are in the sideboard. By the way,
yeah, those are the sizes.
So,
but yeah,
slow down.
This deck is
but
awesome.
Yes, it has a ton of one mana removal spells. Yeah, there's a lot of like play a land go going on in this deck. Not super exciting. I think I saw like Shaheen Surrani was playing white blue control deck at this event too and did pretty well with it.
Yeah.
So that like white blue control is kind of making a comeback lately. You can kind of look on like recent like Moto results and you'll see a little bit of that stuff going on. Anyways, let's move on. The second place team, Abzan Death Shadow, Eldrazi Tron, and Grixis Control, and that's Peach Garden Oath, Reed Duke,
yeah.
William Jensen, and Owen Turnwald. Owen Turnwald's playing Grixis Control in this. And he is on a very, like, dirtily Grixis Control deck, actually, too. So he's got 4 Snap and 3 Tassigar, and then just a bunch of, like, removal spells, control spells.
Bunch of does nothing.
Yeah. So there's that one. Third place, Death Shadow Aggro, Nightfall, and Madcap Moon. This is kind of an interesting set here. So the Nightfall deck is really cool. And Eli Cassis has been on a Nightfall deck for quite a while. You see him like popping up in results every once in a while with this kind of deck.
Yeah.
This time he's packing two Gideon Alives and a card in his deck, which I think is kind of cool.
Deck's great. Card's great, yeah.
And sideboard, four Meddling Mage, which is also kind of cool. Nothing like Collected Company into Meddling Mage times two.
All right.
And then Madcap Moon, I think, is worth talking about. This is really, really pretty fantastic deck. So Madcap Moon, I'm just going to go on the list here real quick. Three Snap, three Vanillion Click, one Goblin Darkdwellers, one Platinum Empyrean, one Jace, three Ancestral Vision, four Bolt, four Serum Visions, one Spell Pierce, two Spell Snare, two Izzet Charm, one Mana Leak, three Remand, two Electrolyze, three Cryptic Command, two Madcap Experiment, and two Blood Moon. So it does have a Madcap package in it, but it's very, very slight.
Yeah,
it's
seems like a low count of Blood Moons, but yeah. All right. I just kind of want to go over something after the Omnicat spoilers, because I got kind of distracted by it while we were talking about this.
Yeah, go ahead.
And just some finance stuff. Mistress Bauble is now $53.
Yes, it's ridiculously expensive.
Yeah. And Life of the Loam is now $30.
Go figure.
Straight up. Life of the Loam, $30. Cycle Lands get announced, Life of the Loam went from $12 to $30.
Wow.
Yep. Look at Magic.
Are you sure about that one? I was just looking at Life of the Loam today. I think
it went down. Yeah, 2 days ago it was $31.
Oh, you know what? I was looking at Life of the Loam on Moto, so
online.
It didn't really increase in price so much on Moto.
It went up $5 on Moto.
Oh, it did? Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was that much, but...
Yeah, it went from 11.8 ticks on the 28th to it is now 15.5.
All right, well, yeah, Dredge is seeing a lot more play lately, and I think that
literally
maybe
the
it's
cycle
the
lands,
cycling
so
lands that are really helping to boost.
Yeah, literally the cycling lands. Because 4-1 is when we got the cycling lands, and that's... Or 3-29, or like the 31st, whatever the last day of that month was, the last day of that week. That's when we got Cycling Lands, and it literally went up that day.
Okay.
So, yeah. Welcome to Magic.
All right. Fun. All right, cool. Well, the last team here we'll just mention really quick is Affinity, Death Shadow, Aggro, and then actually another Nightfall deck.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool. Two Nightfall decks in our top four teams.
Yeah, like, the thing is, if you play Nightfall and then you play Death Shadow Jund, like, it's just tricky to figure out what that last deck is going to be.
Yeah.
Because you have to... You've used up kind of all your dual lands, all your shock lands, all of everything, so the question becomes, what non-dual shock land deck are you playing? So you're probably a Moxifle deck, so you're playing, like, Ironworks or Affinity or Eldrazi Tron or like what are you doing with that third deck?
Uh-huh.
If you take an approach like that, so.
Sure. Alright, well, that's all I wanted to cover for this week. Anything else you got, Daryl?
I got nothing else, man.
Alright, dude. Well, we will come back to you next week with more. I'm sure we'll have more spoilers. It's kind of weird how they did it this time. It looks like we got a lot of the commons and uncommons first. Typically, they give you all the most exciting cards first, and then they just, like, dump all the commons on you last.
Dude, they're holding out on us.
They are holding out, so I'm sure
they want us to have the hype, dude.
There's more excitement to come. Either that, or there's just really not a lot in this set, and they really have to stretch it.
The hype, dude.
But those lands are certainly exciting, so I think that if that's all we get in this set, that would be enough to go on, because those are cool. So, all right, cool. Thanks for listening.
Later, everybody.
All right, bye. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.